Good morning. Lots and lots of you I recognize. So nice to see you again. It's lovely to be back here. And we do have today a nice day anyway. It's supposed to be raining more tomorrow, but lovely today. Who's not familiar with being here? Who's not been at Gao House before? All right. Oh, quite a few of you. Welcome. Okay. And does that mean that you're not familiar with meditation either? So those same people, who's new to meditation? Only a few of you. Oh, so quite a few of you meditated even if you haven't been here. Okay. I always like to ask that question. I think what I'd like to do, well, I'll say hello and greetings. And I love teaching these weekend retreats and practicing together with you. So I'm really happy to be invited here. I think before I go into what I want to talk about and what the weekend's going to be like, what I'd like to do, because we're going to be quiet and spend the next 2 days not relating to each other particularly, it's kind of a weird thing, especially if you're not used to it. It feels like sort of forced or somehow weird. But so what I'd like to first of all suggest you do is just take a couple of minutes and just say hello to the people sitting nearby, because you're probably beside a complete stranger. And so it'd be nice to just turn to the people right in your vicinity, greet yourselves, introduce yourselves. So when we do this, that's so sweet, when we do these meditation retreats in silence, it's not that we want to kind of like pretend that you're not there, you know, and kind of shut you out of all awareness. We're actually very aware of each other. We do this so that we are trying to be kind enough to not be in each other's space. It's a giving of respect and giving space and not demanding people to pay attention to us and not have to engage them, and so that we can have the privacy to just be with ourselves without feeling pulled and pushed and blocked. And so it's a kindness, it's a gift, it's a friendly thing. It's not a, you know, cutting out and blocking off kind of energy. So out of great respect, we don't have to now deal with each other. Phew, what a relief. So, but we're all here, and we're all know that we're all here, and we want to all be here. So we're here because we care for ourselves, and we care for our people in our lives, and we care for each other. And so being in retreat together is a kind thing, and it's a friendly and it's a supportive thing, but it's just a non-interfering way. So, and it works, even though it feels maybe weird to begin with. And some of you will want to maybe have more contact than you have in retreat. But you'll find, if you're new to it, that just it's such a rarity to be together and be friendly, not hostile, and be quiet. So welcome to the quiet, the blessed quiet. Okay, so this weekend, our retreat, connecting the mind and the heart. So in the description, it's funny having to describe a retreat months ahead, because, you know, then it's like, how do I feel right today? But I'm trying to find the title of this retreat. Uh-huh. The description you have, if you read it, and if you're here because of what you've read, says, becoming intimate with our living reality, as opposed to merely thinking about life, helps us deeply connect to our experience without being bound by it. Sinking from the busy peripheral experience of mental activity into the quiet clarity of conscious presence is the movement we make as we practice meditation. Please come and join us. So I want to talk a bit about that, about the sinking into the present experience of meditation and what it means, meditation. How I'm going to organize the weekend, and I have been when I come here and when I do weekend retreats, is I'll talk about it to begin with. So we kind of connect with why we're here and what we're doing. And then give some instructions, and then we'll practice. And then again, after lunch, I'll talk some more about what we're doing that afternoon and why we're doing it and what particularly to practice for the afternoon. So at the beginning of the morning, at beginning of the afternoon, beginning of tomorrow morning, beginning of tomorrow afternoon is when I'll talk. So I decided today to talk about when one meditates, when one has meditated, and a number of you, like me, have meditated for a while. When meditation moves beyond something you do, becomes integrated in how you live your life, you're transformed. It's a slow, ongoing, lifelong transformation that's happening. But what is happening, the results of what happens as we integrate being present in our lives, the results of this transformation are absolutely exquisite. It's not like you reach a sort of perfect state or anything like that. It's an ongoing experiential. But the experiences increasingly are things like, I have lists of them, contentment. I have a little story about contentment. The most contented people that I'm not a traveler particularly. I'm not really interested in looking, I'm content. I don't look for more experiences elsewhere. However, I have traveled a little bit. I mostly go to England, go back to where I was a child, in beautiful countryside. I was in Orkney, a group of islands north of Scotland. Anybody been there? So it's a small group of islands, and they have like one bigger island called the mainland. It's not the mainland, it's the main Orkney Island, and then some smaller ones. And so I was on the bigger one, the mainland, which has a little town. And then one day I took a ferry from that town, 45 minutes, to one of the smaller islands, Westray. And I hired somebody online to meet me and drive me around that island and be my guide for the day, a local person who had grown up there and who'd been away to Glasgow to university and had now come back as a biologist and a guide. And so he and his 4x4 were driving me around. And so at some point, there were about 450 people who live on this little island. And so I asked this man, how many times would people from this little island where you live take the trip in reverse that I have just done, which is 40 minutes on a ferry, to the little town, to go for the day to the town, go shopping or go to the town? How often? And he sort of, his eyes roamed around the sky, and he said, never. And I thought then, that's contentment. It's enough to live where you are and be where you are, and you don't even need to go to the local town for anything because there's a boat that comes once a week with the supplies. Contentment becomes increasingly what it's like as we meditate. Along with contentment comes a sense not just of being content, but actually appreciating this is not just enough, whatever it is that's here and happening now, but I actually really appreciate it. There's an appreciation with whatever it is that we're engaged in this life here. And more than appreciate, sometimes we're actually really grateful that it's happening. It seems to be valuable and precious. And seems increasingly things, so not everything becomes awesome exactly, but things become valuable and meaningful and somehow blessed, and somehow there's more honoring of things, the simple things. You're nodding. I know you know what I'm talking about. So, with the sort of feeling of honoring, our heart connects with things. And that's why we honor things, because we feel them in our hearts. And so there's this engaging and this respect and care that comes. And that's why things feel blessed to us. So this is not the way we begin, you know, when we begin meditation, we're wanting more of this. Another aspect that happens when meditation becomes more part of how we live is a calm, a kind of much more easy ability to be settled and steady and calm, instead of being rattled and on our toes and tense and sort of bumpy. You know, there's a sort of smoothness about things. It's a smoothness in ourselves, and so therefore I always hit things when I can't keep my hands still when I talk. I must have some French blood. I don't, but I just pretend. So, there's a Serenity is one of the words that is in the Buddhist language, but to be able to be more serene, I love the sound of that word, but the meaning of it. And so there's more a sort of feeling of gracefulness with dealing with life rather than friction. You know, it's smoother. Sounds attractive, doesn't it? It is. With this sort of peacefulness, in a much more peaceful calm, there comes, it's quieter, but there's more joy, there's more happiness, there's lightness, there's ready laughter. Little moments that would be, and still can be, you know, irritating. Little stupid things happen, or you drop things, or you trip, or, you know, there isn't something when you reach for it, and those moments are there, but they burst out into laughter really quickly, really. They're not so serious. Things aren't so heavy or serious. There's this sort of sense of, like, it's all okay. Even when things are difficult, there's an inner sense of greater well-being to deal with it all. Somebody else is arriving. I think she knows where to go. Just to warn you that you might need to be a host. So another thing that happens is that our experience of life is seen with a much broader perspective. We kind of include all, not all, but with increasingly the matrix of what's going on, not just what's going on. Without meditation in our experience, we notice things and people and incidents and an idea, but they're kind of out of context. But with more meditation, it's like the eyes are able to take in the background. And so then things that aren't sort of out of their context, therefore they make sense. When you kind of see why things are the way they are, and of course they are that way, you're not going to be so bothered by them. You can integrate them, if you know what I'm saying. When you kind of see, well, of course she's behaving that way, she's tired. It isn't like, how dare she behave that way, you know? That kind of thing. So there's increasingly that sense of perspective. Kathy, hello. Welcome. Absolutely. There's a chair right there. Another thing that comes along, and most of you recognize this, and these just grow in all of us. I love this one. It's like we grow our capacity. Our capacity to tolerate difficult things, challenges. We grow a capacity to be with things, to be with things we like, to be with things we don't like, to be with ordinary things. It's like it's almost like the heart grows, or everything grows, the mind grows, the stomach. We can stomach stuff that we couldn't stomach before because we got a bigger stomach. We can hold in our hearts stuff that either we didn't even notice before. We find we can care about more things without getting overwhelmed, for instance. Our minds are more open, so we're more available for other people's opinions, or we learn things because there's more of an openness of mind. It's like this capacity to receive really grows. When we're less familiar with meditation and it's not so integrated, we have a reduced capacity in comparison. And so things rattle us, or things miss us, or things bother us, and so on. And so this is a capability. I like the word capacity. I don't like the sound of the word capacity. It sounds very Latin or something. It doesn't have any meaning. I like words which have onomatopoeia in them, but can anybody give me a beautiful word for capacity? It feels like the word whole, whole. I like that word. It's got a big room. It's like a big open womb. I like that kind of word. I was a midwife, after all. Anyway, that kind of ability that we have, growing ability we have, to be able to be fully with life. We're fuller. We can be fuller. We have more room to be. We can hold things well. You know, we can actually receive and then embrace situations and people and ourselves better. That, you know, before we can't. We don't like ourselves. We don't like people. We want this to be this way. We're busy trying to push and pull and fix things. And this way we're more and more able to receive and to allow and to hold. We can listen to people. That's a big thing. You know, we can't listen. Without some training, we don't listen. We just hear a few words and have an opinion right away, and then we usually, you know, cut off the sentence and change it to what we think. And you know what I mean? We're kind of full of our own ideas and assumptions, and we're hasty to judge. And this is a growing spaciousness, a growing heart. Jack Kornfield calls these qualities noble. He says, noble ones, often when he's talking, you know, talked. I'll use my left hand, I'll try my left hand. Oh, noble ones, he'll say, talking to, because it's us. And these are, we all can do all this, right? I'm not saying a foreign language, I'm not talking about some ideal here. This is, we all know these things, but they become much more accessible to us. They become more the way we are. And this is really why we meditate, and it's why we want to meditate. We want to be more friendly and to be more peaceful and to be more happy and with all that more understanding and so on, which is why we're motivated to come on a weekend like this. But the thing to remember is initially meditation is like something that you learn. First of all, it's skills. You learn these skills, and then you apply these skills, and then you, from time to time you do it. You sit down and you do it. You do your meditation. So it's a thing to do. But as time goes by, it changes you. And so it isn't a thing to do anymore. It isn't a doing. It's a being. It becomes a way of being, a way of living, a way of relating to yourself and everything. And that's how it's transformative. So it gets into you. So if anybody's really new and you were worried about addictive tendencies, I have to warn you, this is an addictive tendency. Because it becomes delicious and becomes we become ennobled in it in moments and moments. And it's subtle. And it's gradual. And so you may not think, you know, you don't know what you're getting out of it. But as you live your life and as you reflect, you know, as you have a little more space to reflect, for instance, more space in that way, you have more space in your mind to be reflective and to understand things. You appreciate it. You appreciate this subtlety. These deeper dimensions of living, which, you know, our busy day-to-day, work-a-day lives are just getting increasingly full. The opposite, you know, louder, faster, more stressful, more bumpy, and less space. So we need these, I think, increasingly, with the modern era speeding up as it does and getting fuller as it seems to, I think we need this even more. We've always needed this, but I think it's absolutely essential these days. It's my opinion. So I have some words from wise people. Has anybody heard of Brother David Stendhal something or other? What's his last name? It's a short... I'm terrible at names at the best of times. It's like best, but it's not that. But anyway, Rast, R-A-S-T. Thank you very much. Beautiful. His Benedictine monk, old man. And he's got some very favorite, if you like, favorite TED Talks on gratefulness, for instance, beautiful face. So here's some words. He says, he talks about leisure. I think of meditation as in this department of life. To recover a healthy understanding of leisure is to come a long way towards understanding contemplation, which takes space and time. Usually when we work for purpose. We want to achieve a particular thing, and when we've achieved it, we stop working. Like, we don't want to do that thing unless we're getting the purpose done. Like, once you've done fix the car, you don't need to keep working on it, right? Whereas play has no purpose. You know, you play to play, like you dance to dance, or you sing to sing, or, you know, so on. No purpose is required. You experience something for its own sake. The meaning of doing it is in the experience of doing it. Not like work. If we can combine work with meaning rather than purpose, more than purpose, meaning, then we'll have, you know, satisfaction in our work lives. Rather than trying to get over it, you know, something to get over so we can get on to real life, right? Meaningless work is a form of killing time, he says. He also says busyness in the Chinese, I've said this many times, there's a Chinese word, I don't know Chinese, but there is a word, maybe you would know this, Sheila, there's a Chinese word for busy, and it's as in the, you know, the way the construction of the Chinese language is two symbols together, square. One is killing and one is heart. Sobering. He talks about the heart. He talks about when you do push-ups, for instance. I can't imagine a monk doing push-ups, but anyway, maybe he does. Maybe he used to. He said, you can only do so many push-ups and then your muscles need a break. So that's kind of like working the muscles. Whereas the heart, he says, it's always working, but it never needs a break. And the reason it never needs a break is because it's taking a break all the time. It's doing a beat and then it's resting, doing a beat and then resting. So it's a leisurely work. It's working with leisure. And so it doesn't ever tire itself out. Can we live like that? Do the things we do with space, with some leisure in it. Live our lives with space in it, with some ease in it, so that we don't have life as one big long achievement that we get tired of and trying to get over to some other thing. And then here's a quote from Lewis C.S. Lewis, not Lewis Carroll, beg your pardon, that's Alice Through the Wonderland, no. C.S. Lewis, he says that like philosophy and art and the universe itself, they have no survival value. Won't help us survive, but they give value to survival. He's talking about the meaning of life rather than the purpose. And Pope Francis wrote that, you know, a recent pope, a new pope with his rather more modern attitude. Here are some things he has to say. When media and the digital world become omnipresent, their influence can stop people from learning how to live wisely, to think deeply, to love generously. The dangers of digital detritus he calls mental pollution. I'm only quoting him because I completely agree with him. We should simplify and improve the quality of our life. This is why we have these things, apparently. But instead, they distract attention away from what's really important. Do our technological advances help or hurt the causes when those causes should be engaging with our lives to the fullest, fostering peace, love, happiness? Unplugged, off the grid, and out of range are synonymous with inner peace. So everybody's unplugged for the day. I was recently teaching a retreat at Spirit Rock, and what they do now, this big center in California, and so now at the beginning of the retreat, there's the evening that people arrive for residential retreats, and then the next morning, you're kind of like, you're sort of now in there, and you've now arrived, and they put this big basket up by this, have a great big gong, and they ask people to come if they want to put their phones in the gong, in the basket, and then they ring the gong for every phone that goes in. And I just was there. It took a long time this time because there were 91 students on this retreat and there were about 56 phones in the basket. It's becoming appreciated. And I taught, the first time I did that was a retreat for young adults and being aged 18 to 35. And so I put this basket out and asked them to put their phones in. And I didn't just ask. I said, I strongly, strongly recommend you put your... And so they, of course, were young. And one guy was like... You know, he didn't want to have to put it, and he put it in and picked it up and put it in about three times. Okay. Because we get so caught up in them. I don't think it's possible to be present and mindful on a device. I actually don't think it's possible. And just yesterday I was walking, and I was actually with my sister, and she needed to go into the hospital for a test, and we were leaving. And there was a father and three young kids, really young kids, and mum was in there for something or other. I don't know the details. And these three kids were sort of crawling around on him. They were little. They were all under five, I'm sure. One was quite a baby. And I could just hear the odd comment they were making about mummy and this and that and the other. And he's going, uh-huh, uh-huh, while he's on his phone. I was shaking my head too. It's like, anyway, that's... Thich Nhat Hanh, many of you know who that is, would say, it's your life, don't miss it. Life is so short, he says, we should all move more slowly. We have a limited number of nows. We only have this life, and it's fleeting and uncertain. And so I'm going to get to meditation in just a second, having got us in the mood. Tenzin Palmo, who's heard of Tenzin Palmo? Some of you have. She's a woman who's an English woman who lives in Nepal or North India. I'm not sure where she lives right this moment. Who, when she was a very little girl, she was from London, her parents took her to the British Museum, like all good British parents should take their children to the British Museum. And when she got to the British Museum and they got to the Tibet exhibit, aged 4, she climbed inside the exhibit. And she wanted to be a Tibetan. And as soon as she was old enough, age 20, she went to Tibet. And she went and met a Tibetan teacher, and she became a Tibetan nun, and she actually ended up practicing there, which was very difficult for nuns in that place, because for a long time there weren't any. And she ended up living in a cave for 12 years, and she wrote a book called Cave in the Snow, which some of you may have heard of. Anyway, she's the author. And so she says this. This is slightly potted notes here. We need to collect ourselves. We need steadfastness of mind to become dignified, impeccable, carefully present, honest, responsible. His descriptions of being noble. This is the energy of a warrior. The reason we are too lazy is that we're stopped by fear and lethargy, the great inertia of mind. The practice is there. Anyone on the Buddhist path certainly knows these things. So how is it that we're not enlightened? We have no one to blame but ourselves. She's a little bit... She doesn't mince her words. She calls a spade, this woman. This is why we stay in samsara, because we're always finding excuses. Samsara is in the teaching of the Buddhism. It's like the round of births and death. It means we get caught. We see something, we get attached to it, we want it, we need it, we're stressed out because we're just busy trying to get that thing. And as soon as that's finished, then there's something, oh, we don't like this, and now we get caught in trying to deal with that. We keep going round and round, busily engaged in this sort of frustrated activity rather than live spacious, serene in all the beautiful ways I was describing, which are what lead to and are themselves and increasingly more the experience of awakened freedom. So we stay caught up in samsara because we always find excuses. Instead, we should wake ourselves up. The whole Buddhist path is about waking up, yet the desire to keep sleeping is so strong. However much we say we will wake in order to help all beings, we don't really want to. We like dreaming. So those beautiful descriptions I just gave, talking about how meditation integrates into ourselves and changes the way we are, actually, and therefore the way we experience life and the way we relate to it and the way people relate to us and all, is work. You know, it's not just drifting in the old, you know, old dream. When we're not meditating and we haven't learned meditation, the mind is running us. But we can master the mind. The mind can become an instrument which we can put to good use, which can actually be really helpful. But if we haven't learned to master it, it simply runs us like a tyrant. And when things happen to us, which they always will, which please us, we tend to then get all excited and want them and try and cling on to them and then whine and complain when they break or leave or end. And when things come and happen to us in or out, which are upsetting or difficult or painful, we complain and we whine and we struggle and we do a million things. We blame people, we sue people, we freak out, we worry about what's going to happen next, we turn it into a big monster and get all caught up. That's with no training. That's what the mind tends to do. It's just runs us ragged. And so we meditate. Meditation is training our minds not to be this way. So now we get to meditating.